Chapter 12. Cold, rank water hits Nora in the face. It pours over the top of her head. A sour bile spit smell filling her nose. She coughs and sputters, standing up inside her cage. Two stormtroopers stand on the grated metal ceiling of the prison in which she sits. Above them, the Imperial fleet hangs, veiled behind bands of gauzy clouds. One of the troopers holds a bucket. The other has his blaster rifle pointed down. From her vantage point below them, with the sun above, the Imperials look like little more than shadows, scavenger birds, ready to pick her bones as soon as her flesh gives up.
"Wake up!"
the one with the bucket says. He lets it hang loose, and it knocks against the side of his armor. Armor that's no longer the pristine white of most troopers. This armor has been marked and gouged, painted and carved into. The one with the blaster rifle has blood-red dye spattering the face of his helmet, shaped into the crude icon of a skull. Taking what was always metaphorical about the stormtroopers and literalizing it, "We are the agents of death," it says. "We are killers."
"I could just shoot her,"
the rifle-holding trooper says. He gestures down through the bars of the wrought metal cage, the tip of his rifle poking through.
"She's just another mouth to feed. I could close that mouth permanently."
"Do it," she whispers. He does. "No!" The blaster goes off, and everything around her lights up red. The bolt digs a furrow out of the hard sand pack beneath her feet. She dances away from it, panic throttling her.
"She's awake now,"
the bucket holder says. The two troopers laugh and keep walking, boots clanging. Nora kneels down and weeps. Hours later, she's up and working a Kesium gas rig. It's a big cylinder bore screwed into the sand, and it needs people all around it to turn valves and tug levers to balance the rush of gas coming up from beneath the mantle. Let too much up at one time, and the whole thing pops its top, maybe blowing them all to vapor. Let too little up, and the shaft line seals shut as the sand collapses back into the channel. She's here, chained along the edge with half a dozen other prisoners, all shackled around the circumference of the well. If any one of them fails, they either get punished or get dead. Worse, she still smells like bile and spit. That, courtesy of the bucket dumped over her. It wasn't water. Oh no, nobody would waste water on this planet just to wake up a prisoner. It was backwash from a hapabore trough. Rancid water sloshed in and out of their leathery maws. Nora, at this moment, has never felt so alone. When the troopers brought them here, they scanned and ran their faces, said that there was a bounty out for Jazz. Before Nora knew what was happening, they were throwing her friend aboard a sand-scoured shuttle. And just like that, Jazz was gone. That was a week ago, or longer. Nora can't even tell anymore. After they took Jazz, some puck-cheeked officer asked Nora point-blank if she wanted to die or if she wanted to work. The answer was easy. If Nora gets dead, then that means Sloane escapes. Death was not an option. Not until revenge had its day. "I'll work," she told him. So they brought her here. Where here is, though, she barely knows. Kilometers from some place called Crater Town, apparently. And so she works. Every day she works this same black valve. The metal on the wheel so hot, it first blistered her fingers. By now, though, those blisters have turned to calluses, and the skin around them is dry and splitting. It doesn't even bleed. "I don't think I have blood anymore." Just dry Jakku dust whispering through her veins. To her right, A hollow-eyed alien hunches over a set of levers. The bone-white creature doesn't talk much. Occasionally, it moans into the backs of its hands. It weeps tears that glitter like silica. To Nora's left is a dirt-cheeked man. His face round and thick, even though the rest of his body looks like a skeleton draped in the rags of his own skin. He sometimes grins over at her, the broken-toothed smile of a bona fide madman, and he sings little songs. Gom is his name.
Gom, Gom, the big do-bum, the wumbo-bum, speaking on the intercom, dizzy-wizzy holocron.
His words, not hers. One of his bizarre songs. He reminds her in a way of Mr. Bones. If Mr. Bones were a lunatic prisoner stuck on a dead dirt world.
Fancy a mancy,
he says to her.
Fancy a mancy,
she answers back, not having any idea what it means. It matters little. Nora needs to get out of here. An obvious sentiment, but true just the same. She's been thinking on escape plans, and none of them are sensible. The chains that bind them are literally just that. Chains threaded through metal manacles. Breaking them doesn't seem to be an option. Not by herself, at least. She thought about sabotaging the rig and letting it explode. But what good would that do her? It's a fantasy to think that somehow it would bulge and detonate in just the right way, shearing her chain and letting her free. Far likelier to turn her into a scattering of charred bone across the sand. Plus, this Kesium rig is not the only one. Front to back, another dozen rigs topping another dozen wells sit all around. If this one goes, they all might. Which means she might not kill just herself. So that's not an option. What then? She has no answer. She keeps working. She tries to cry, but no tears come. Nora has no more tears, just as she has no more blood. It seems that on this planet, she'll just dry up and flake away when the night winds come. At the end of the day, they throw her back in the cage. A portion of food lands in with her. A rubbery plastic packet of protein mush. Sometimes it's a powder, and they give her a little water with it, and the powder sizzles and turns into something. A ballooning piece of bread. A cup of gruel. A biscuit so hard it's like biting into a fresh-baked brick. Today, though, it's just this packet of goop. She tears the top off with her teeth and greedily slurps it down. It tastes like the Hapabore spit smells. But it will sustain her. Ah, nothing better than eating one's own sick. That voice. She knows it. She wheels around on the one who spoke. And there stands Singier outside her cage. A cocky tilt to his hips and a smug, self-satisfied sneer on his face. He nips from a flask.
Nora, dear.
How?
She asks.
Who can say? I am cold and conjured. I'm here to rescue you.
My, my, we do find ourselves in cages, don't we?
And I don't mean that as a thematic conceit, either. I mean, well, look around you. Metal cage. Imprisoned once again. Naughty business, this empire.
Well, get me out of here,
she says. A hand falls on her shoulder. She startles, crying out, raising a fist to whoever would grab her.
Whoa,
Temin says, holding up both hands.
Hey, relax. It's okay. It's me. It's your son. We're getting you out of here. Me and Wedge. Just sit tight.
Her son? He's here? He came back for her. And there behind him is Wedge Antilles. And he's got that boyish smile and those dark, warm eyes. For a moment, the pulse in her neck quickens. And yet,
how are they here in the cage with her? That doesn't make any sense at all.
Suddenly, she's doubling over, her middle clenching up as waves of heat and cold take turns crashing into her. Sweat slicks her brow even as her lips go dry. She tries to say her son's name, but all she can manage is a sad mewling, like a rodent caught in the teeth of a trap. She looks up to him, but he's gone. So too is Sinjir.
They were never here at all, were they? No. Just illusions pressed upon her by the heat. Suddenly she understands Gom. The sun and dust have blasted his sanity away, like a coat of paint scoured free. And she wonders if sanity is really just that. Something to be worn off. A veneer that with enough pressure and effort can be stripped away. Civilization, too, can fail the same way, can't it? Scraped down to nothing, leaving only the raw metal of anarchy and oppression behind. And madness. That is the Empire. That is what it has done to her and to the galaxy. A corrosive force eating away at everyone and everything. A new illusion seizes her. This hallucination reaches her ears before her eyes, and she hears the mechanized voice of her son's droid, Mr. Bones. Trails of sand slither along on a sudden wind, like snakes, and they carry those familiar words of his.
Roger, Roger!
Distorted and broken by static. And sure enough, the hallucination completes itself as it reaches her eyes, too. Nora lifts her head, no small effort, and glances over her shoulder to see Bones trotting along through the camp, pushed along by a stormtrooper whose mask shows the carvings of endless jagged spirals. The trooper says to a nearby officer,
"Found this out by the step. It was poking around another escape pod."
"Look at this old thing," the officer says, sitting under a small tent pitched in the dirt. It's the same pock-cheeked prig who brought her here. Effny, she thinks his name is.
"How kind of him to participate in my hallucination,"
she thinks, and laughs out loud at the absurdity of it. He lifts the saw-toothed beak of the old droid with one hand, while using the other to dab his brow with a wet sponge.
"This old clanker has seen some modifications since the Clone Wars. Probably belongs to some nomad or spacer."
"I fitted it with a restraining bolt. What do you want me to do with it?"
Effny pulverizes the sponge in his fist, and a stream of water spatters his outstretched tongue. Nora knows the droid is just a vision, but that water isn't. It's real. So real she can almost taste it. Water. The officer, done drinking, wipes his mouth with the back of his hand and answers,
"I don't care one way or the other. Destroy it. Wait. No. Send it on the next transport ship heading back to the Ravager. The old man is up there, and I'm sure Borum would find it a fascinating piece of antiquity. Maybe he'll pull for us to get some more portions down here."
"Yes, sir."
To the droid, the trooper says,
"Move along, B1.
Roger, Roger.
Nora pushes her forehead against the scabby metal of her prison. She watches Bones march away, his servos whining, his joints crunching as this world's grit grinds between them. This hallucination is quite the persistent one. Unless, poking around another escape pod. What if? Could it be? What if Temin sent Bones before the moth hit hyperspace? What if he ejected the droid? Or himself? The heat once more is pushed away from her, this time not from feverish chills, but from the cold realization that this is no phantasm. That mirage is no mirage. It's Mr. Bones. It's really him.
"I fitted it with a restraining bolt."
"Send it up on the next transport ship."
"No. She needs that droid.
Bones can save her. Nora has no plan. Not that there's any time for one. Suddenly she calls out, "That's my droid!" The trooper halts. So does the officer.
Bones keeps walking, until the trooper grabs him with a rough glove and yanks him back.
The officer and the trooper share a look, and with the hook of a finger, Effni gestures them forward.
The officer stands in front of her.
"You," he says. "What did you say?"
"I said, that's my droid."
Her voice is raw, as if her vocal cords have been dragged behind a speeder over volcanic stone. She bares her teeth.
"I want him back, now."
The trooper stands there, looking from her to the droid.
The officer just laughs. Bones, for his part, seems to pay no attention to any of this. In the center of his narrow ribcage-like chest sits a black restraining bolt.
"You're telling me you own this droid?"
the officer asks.
"I am. You let him go. And me too, or you're in deep spit."
The officer grabs the stormtrooper's blaster rifle.
"This droid?"
He points the blaster and fires.
The droid's arm spins away, detached from the body. The shoulder socket sparks as the arm hits the ground.
"No!"
she cries out.
"Wait, please."
"Are you sure you mean this droid?"
Effni says through a venomous scowl and slams the droid up against the cage.
She reaches for Bones through the metal, but suddenly the air lights up with blaster fire. She can't see the officer, not at first, because Bones' frame blocks her view. But as laser fire tears bits of the droid off, piece by piece, so does her view of that officer become more complete. His face is a mask of rage. And again, she has that image of sanity being scrubbed away, revealing something altogether more monstrous underneath. Bones stands there and takes it. Parts of him shot off by the blaster rifle. Limbs and bits banging against the cage before hitting the ground. Until he has been broken apart into a pile of constituent pieces. Until Effni is standing there, sweating, panting, leering. Until she, too, is broken, collapsing backward. She sobs, though again, no tears come out. She turns and throws up, but it's just dry heaving. Nora curls up on her side and gazes into the eyes of her son's droid. Eyes that flicker before finally going dead and dark.
Effni offers a dismissive sniff. He tosses the blaster rifle back to the trooper, who barely manages to catch it.
"Sorry, scum. It seems this droid is malfunctioning."
To the trooper, he says,
"I suppose Borum won't get to see this curious antiquity after all."
"Should I clean it up?"
the trooper asks.
"No. Let her look upon the wreckage of this mutant machine."
He gasps suddenly.
"Gods, it's hot. I need water. Let's go."
They walk away. Bones remains in pieces. Nora curls up into herself.